So the course is 10.5 miles, so that's 17 kilometers. My time of 3 hours 40 was 1:17 pace. So yeah, if it was the Olympic qualification equivalent, and I was in the best shape of my life, and with all of the elements that I've learned from this swim, I could go.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. Now, last week on this show, we welcomed distance specialist Sam Short, and on this week's episode, we are taking distance swimming one step further as we speak to the new world record holder of the Lake Windermere end-to-end, Hector Pardo.
Yeah, we're very glad to be having Hector on for this week's episode. He's just broken, like Scott was saying, the Lake Windermere course record whilst raising money for Lake District Foundation to help stop sewage contamination of the lakes, which of course we all know is a problem right now. We also talk about his plans for the next distance swimming challenge, as well as the rest of the upcoming Olympic year, of course.
So please welcome a returning podcast guest, actually our first ever elite swimming guest, Dan.
Very true.
Bit of a throwback here. And GB's leading open water male swimmer, who came 10th at the recent World Championships in Fukuoka, Hector Pardo. Hector, thank you for joining us this week. How are things with you after what is a busier summer than most elite swimmers have had?
Well, thank you very much for having me again. I wasn't too sure that I was your first ever guest, but privileged to have been. So thank you for reminding me. Busy summer. I raced at the World Championships in Fukuoka, and then I was set to race in the Paris Olympic test event 4 weeks later, which sadly got cancelled before taking a summer holiday. And then I was back in after 2 weeks of training in Windermere this weekend, trying to break the record and raise some money for the Lake District Foundation.
Absolutely. So that essentially is a very nice introduction. Thank you. That covers essentially what we're going to cover on this podcast then. We are going to get into why the Paris test event was cancelled, what potentially is the outlook for the Olympics with it. And then, yes, we'll touch upon your record-breaking swim as well. But for those listeners who maybe haven't heard our first podcast around with you, maybe are aware of the name Hector Pardo because they've seen the clips of the Olympics. But for you, why is open water the way that your swimming career is heading right now? What is the appeal of it?
Obviously, the format in terms of distance is 6.5 times the distance of anything available in the pool. And I've always been distance inclined. So at the age of 14, 15, when I was channeled into open water swimming, fortunately through my coach at the time, Alan Bircher, who actually won a silver medal at a World Championships in 2003. So I kind of got into it through him. I was then picked up and went to a Swim England Mallorca camp where I thoroughly enjoyed it all. And then I was selected to go to the World Juniors that year. And I got two medals, one in the 5K and one in the relay. So ever since then, every summer, I kind of focused and switched my training from the pool to open water. And then when I was 18, after I'd finished my A-levels, I made the decision to move out to France to sole focus on open water with a coach called Philippe Luca. I trained in the south of France in Montpellier. And I stayed there for 3 years, where I ultimately achieved my ambition of qualifying for Tokyo. And that was kind of the whole aim of moving out to France. It was either I had two options after my A-levels, move to Loughborough, which I've ultimately done anyway now. But this was back in 2019. And the two guys who were considerably better than me back then, Jack Burnell and Toby Robinson, both trained there. So I thought, go there and be in their shadow and chase them up and down the pool all day, or take myself out of that environment, move myself to France, learn a whole new culture, language, train with a different coach, enjoy the lovely French weather. And that's ultimately what I went for. So yeah, moved out there, was thrown in the deep end at 18, had to quickly pick up French and train there for 3 years. And like I said before, ultimately, it led to my Olympic qualification.
I remember some of the sets that you described to us last time round when you'd only just moved out there. So how were the shoulders holding up after 3 years under your French coach, and the meterage was ridiculous from memory.
Yeah, so the meterage is pretty similar to what I'm doing now, but just the intensity is a lot different. For the first year and a half, that was great. It was kind of, my body had gone from an age group level and an age group program of swimming 40 to 45 kilometers a week in 9 sessions in a short course pool. You've seen the Ellesmere pool. It's not a pleasant pool. But and then all of a sudden I was out in France training in an 8-lane 50 for 10 sessions, 11 sessions a week, swimming 85 kilometers. So I reaped the rewards for that for a year and a half. And then I kind of think that my body burnt out a little bit from so much intensity, and I started picking up illnesses that I'd never had issues with before in my career, such as shingles, and I also got glandular fever before Tokyo, and I kind of bottled that up. My French coach knew about it, but not really anyone else knew about it, and so I had to deal with all of that pressure. And then ultimately, I didn't get the result that I wanted to in Tokyo, regardless of the eye injury. And so I had to assess the situation, and I decided that moving to Loughborough and training a far more smart and reserved training method, which is the 80-20 model, you may be aware of it, under Andy Manley, who had already developed a fantastic distance squad, was the right decision. So I moved there in February 2022, because initially I thought, I can keep going until Paris, come on Hector, mentally, with Philippe out in France. But midway through the year, I kind of crashed and hadn't really forced myself to come back to the UK and train in Loughborough and hopefully, well, ultimately study as well as. You know as well as I that swimming's not a hugely paid sport. So setting myself up for my career after with a degree was really important to me as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you've had a massive journey already. I mean, you're still in your early 20s. I mean, it seems like you've gone through so many ups and so many downs. You've tried different things, gone to different countries, had different coaches. You've had the job lot, and you've come away from this recent World Championships in 10th position. I mean, how would you rate your performances out there?
So it's one place improvement from the year prior in Budapest. So I left pretty happy with the performance, but now I've had time to reflect on it a little bit more. I'm hungry to go even better, and I think I can. I think there were a few issues that, well, not issues, but areas that I can improve on, and hopefully I'm going to implement that this season. Go and do the business in Paris.
So what are those areas that you're working on then?
So I think you've mentioned the eye injury in Tokyo. I struggled a lot in terms of confidence after that for a year or so, or maybe even a year and a half.
Is that like confidence with the physicality in the water? You were just avoiding it?
No, not the physicality. I wasn't too bothered about. It was more that I'd made that huge sacrifice, moved out for 3 years to France and dealt with the whole pressure, trained this relentless, horrific training regime to qualify. And every single day I'm envisioning myself racing in the Olympics. And then I go and I kind of have my dreams cut short by an eye injury like that. And there's a lot of doubt after I had a lot of momentum building into it. And then all of a sudden that Olympics is over and the next Olympics is coming. And everyone's just saying, well, you didn't finish in Tokyo. And so the momentum behind me kind of stopped. And so that also made myself question myself. Yeah. And so it was hard. It was hard for a year and a half to get that back. But I think I did this year successfully, and I went into Fukuoka a lot more confident, though it is certainly still an element I need to improve on. And I'm going to work with psychologists this year, I think, to master that before Paris next year. A few other elements are as well, I think, altitude. Last year I went on 2 altitude camps. Hopefully this year I'm going to go on 3. And in comparison to my competitors, like Florian Welbrook, they're going on 3 to 4 as well. So kind of getting up to their level in that and matching them in that is really important to me. And hopefully that will close the gap. Maybe not completely, but significantly.
Well, I was going to bring up Welbrook because he seems to have brought a whole new different tactic to open water where he just, I don't know, how do you find that next level then? You said about you've dealt with negativity, but how do you keep up with him tactically, I suppose, when you're looking ahead to a sort of Paris?
Yeah, so going into Tokyo, I don't think anybody had ever anticipated that someone was going to break away. You probably saw it in 2016 with Gerard Port. He attempted it and ultimately failed. So I think that's why Welbrook was so successful in Tokyo. He took everyone by surprise. Not even the great Gregorio Paltineri was expecting it. And that kind of played into my race as well, where I was sat normally mid-pack thinking someone's at the front, but I didn't know it was Florian Welbrook. And I see Gregorio Paltineri next to me and I have the thought process, that's okay. Like, I'm doing quite well here. He's going to be towards the front at the end. So nothing to stress about. So, going into Paris, I think everybody's going to expect that now. The element of surprise is gone. And you've seen that in races. I mean, he's still able to win. So I don't know. It's even that we've responded to it as the marathon world. And we anticipate these tactics now before races. He still wins. But people are going to be even more prepared for it at Paris. I think with the current currents in the River Seine will play a huge factor as well. And I think Florian Welbrook's a more of a... He swims the best in flat conditions and some of the more traditional open water conditions, like the Portugal Setebal race that's normally every year, which is a World Cup. You never really see him come and race there. And so hopefully Paris is wavy and he can't get the rhythm that he got in Fukuoka and Tokyo in Paris, hopefully.
Yeah, from memory as well, you always perform the best in Setubal as well.
Like, that's Setubal is my best race location. It's my lucky charm.
So you've mentioned Paris a lot, Len. So let's start looking ahead to the Olympics next year. And what was meant to happen this summer, you hinted it in the intro, was a test event for the open water. Now, this didn't go ahead because of water conditions. So do you know kind of how bad that actually was and what was meant by a cancellation for water conditions?
So when we arrived on the Thursday, we were meant to race on the Sunday. And we were supposed to go down to the River Seine and have an acclimatization session as well as Friday and Saturday. But we were quickly told that that on Thursday and Friday were off because there'd been heavy rainfall and the water quality wasn't good enough for us to swim in for World Aquatics to deem it safe. So it was quickly in doubt whether the race was going to go ahead, but we prepared like it was. This is the Paris Olympic course, and this is a practice for next year. So we remain as professional as we can because this could happen next year. And if we switch off slightly and then it does go ahead, you know, we're at a huge disadvantage. And open water is so spontaneous and such an unpredictable sport that you have to be prepared for elements like that always. You probably saw it with the European Championships in 2022 in Rome, where the race was pushed back 5 days because the feeding pontoon had effectively been swept away in a storm overnight. So this is just the essence of open water swimming, and you have to be prepared for that always. So I think in terms of the actual Paris Olympic test event, though, reading like data, 92% of the time, the water conditions pass. That 8% of the time, this is since April, since the Paris 2024 committee's been testing the water every day. The 8% of the time that it fails was just unfortunately the time that we were there. That's normally when there's heavy rainfall. And as you know, we didn't have an amazing summer in the UK this year. And I think Paris was pretty similar with a lot of rain. And so when it rains, the sewage companies think that it's acceptable and that they'll get away with it by pumping sewage into open water bodies. Because the fresh water from the rain, they think disguises it, but ultimately it doesn't. And it really impacts the water quality and stops open water races, recreational swimming events. Triathlons are forced to become duathlons. And so it's affecting all of these sports massively. But in terms of my confidence for the Paris Olympics, I'm fully behind the Paris Olympic Committee and their preparation and World Aquatics. And I'm confident that it's going to go ahead. They will. I don't think they'll put us at danger in any way. And yeah, I think as well, I heard that they had a backup venue in case anything does happen. So in terms of the possibility of the Paris Olympics open water being cancelled or the triathlon being forced into a duathlon format, that's not going to happen. I don't believe that's going to happen at all. We're racing. There's going to be an Olympic champion next year, and that's the mindset behind it.
You just might have to deal with some obstacles along the way.
Yeah, we might have to deal with a little bit of ugly stuff in the water, let's say.
I saw a tweet, what was it, after, because the triathlon one went ahead, didn't it? And I saw someone in an interview afterwards said, oh, this is just the risk we take, swimming open water. But to me, that's a frankly ridiculous statement. Like, it shouldn't be the risk you take when you swim open water.
I mean, World Aquatics and World Health Organization have a strict policy of you can't swim in water over 1,000 E. coli. So even at like 500 E. coli, there's still risk of getting sick, but it's minute. It's minute. So if you have 10,000 people in the water, for example, only two or three are going to be getting ill. So yeah, the level is 1,000. And I, just to put some stats out there, I think the day before our test event, it was 10,000. So
it was
way too high. And we knew it kind of wasn't going to go ahead, but it was still that element of remaining professional, continuing the training in the pool, and making all our feeds up, having our team talks within British Swimming and discussing the tactics for the next day, like we were racing. Because World Aquatics made the decision that they were going to make the final decision at 3 o'clock on the Sunday morning. So you could act like it's not going ahead and throw out all of the routine. And then all of a sudden at 3 a.m, you wake up and you get the call that it is going ahead. There's that minute chance. And so that's why it was so important to continue everything and act like it was going ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the health and safety of the swimmers has to be paramount at these sort of things. Like when you're sort of talking about E. coli, that stuff can kill you. You know, if you've got a minute chance of getting it, you don't really want to be in it, you know? I mean, my next question, I was going to turn it slightly, but how much of a problem is contamination in lakes and rivers, not just in France, but across the globe?
Massively. I think this year I've experienced it the most in my open water career. Even in Japan, when we got out there, for 3 days, you're aware of Amber Keegan. So the ladies' race was before the men's, the day before. And I don't think Amber actually got one opportunity to swim on the course because the climatization sessions kept getting cancelled. They experienced heavy rainfall as well. And going back to my point earlier, that's when sewage companies love to dump all of the waste into the water, the bodies of water. And then I've seen my partner, Cassandra Bergon, a triathlete. She's ultimately experienced it as well in Sunderland and in Paris, even with the test event, their relay was changed into a duathlon format. So their individual races on day one and day two went ahead, but then the para race on day three and the relay on day four were duathlon formats.
So we're not talking one-off events here. We are talking wherever you're racing around the globe, this is something that you really need to pay attention to, which is like, it's a massive problem right now. We spoke to Professor Greg White, and he did the length of the Thames and said he was violently ill, like afterwards, because the Thames is not a river you actually want to swim in. So for anyone listening, what can people do to stop this happening to our waters in this country?
I would say take an active stance like I have, raise money for organizations that are helping to preserve our open water bodies, like the Lake District Foundation that I chose for my Lake Windermere swim. There's 13 lakes in the Lake District, and every donation that goes towards the Lake District Foundation is spent on preserving those. It doesn't necessarily have to be the Lake District Foundation. I know I chose that one, but there are hundreds of ocean conservation charities out there that you can donate to. And also just proactively making it, showing that it's not acceptable for sewage companies to be doing this, to be pumping the waste into the rivers and the sea and lakes and whatever form of body of water it is. It's not acceptable.
Yeah, we have a geography class actually at school where we put loads of plastic bottles into the pool, and you get the kids to actually have to fish them out, and so you teach them sort of that way, which I think should be done. Well, maybe not, until they get the idea, you know, that it shouldn't be done, like you were saying. But should we talk about your Lake Windermere swim, actually? Because that was obviously one of the main reasons to get you onto this podcast.
Yeah, so about 2 months ago, Lake Windermere was on my mind. I have an iconic English bucket list for open water swims, and Lake Windermere was on that. So I always wanted to swim it, and the time to swim it would be after the open water international season's over. So it was in the planning for a long time, and to be able to do that for a charity like the Lake District Foundation was just another bonus as well. So raising money for them and trying to beat the current record was completely my sole focus. I chose to do it in the British Long Distance Swimming Association rules, which for the average viewer is effectively no wetsuit, swim briefs only, one cap, and no drafting or pacing from anyone. So you're out there completely solo, and it's you against the clock without any wetsuit or open water suit helping you in terms of buoyancy. So that was kind of the idea behind it all. And I only did 2 weeks training for it. I mean, Paris 2024 is the end goal. And that mental reset is hugely important for an Olympic year. So I didn't want to jeopardize that and shorten that and then come back to training and not feel prepared for the whole year, or even get to January and be burnt out by then. So I took my summer break, but I took a slightly more sloped incline on the distance getting back into it.
Now that the swim's over, how much money did you manage to raise in the end?
So I'm going to keep proactively raising money for 2 weeks. There's no time frame on that, actually, to be honest. Really, until I achieve my target of £5,000. I would just hope that I can do that within the next 2 weeks. I've currently raised 900, and Aquasphere are yet to donate 500. Okay. I'll explain that element. So there was 500 participants, including me, so 499 other swimmers. And it was a staggered wave start, so you kind of enter your time whenever you enter for the swim, and then you're separated into waves on your swimming standard. So there was one start at 7:30, 8 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10:30. 10:30 was myself, the fastest wave. And so it wasn't just, most people would be there like, oh, Aquasphere are going to donate £1 for every swimmer you pass. You're an Olympian. Of course you should be passing 499 swimmers. But we weren't starting at the same time. So it was a challenge catching 3 hours up on some people. And every person was £1. So it was kind of fun navigating my way through that. And every swimmer I passed thinking £1, £2, £3, wherever I was in the lake. It was, obviously I didn't count it for the whole 3.5 hours, but that was a cool element to it. And I really appreciate Aquasphere doing that. So hopefully well, no, when they donate, there'll be 1,300 in the on the donation fund page. And after the swim now that I achieved the record, I hope that there'll be a lot more exposure to it and I will be able to achieve that £5,000 target.
Yeah, absolutely. The donation link will be in the show notes of this podcast for anyone who is interested. Let me get this right then. So you broke the course record. I think it was by like 8 minutes. It wasn't some small margin, and yet you've done 2 weeks training. And there will be some people who've tried to break that record and done months and months of months. So how low do you think, if it was, say, your swim for an Olympic qualifier, like let's just say you're in that preparation of your season, how low do you reckon it would go? And let's put it in layman's terms of what is your per 100 pace that wouldn't be needed to go the time that you reckon you could make it?
So the course is 10.5 miles. So that's 17 kilometers. My time of 3 hours 40 was 1:17 pace. I would think if I was fully fit, I could go 1:11s, 1:12s. I've done a 25,000 meters before at that pace, which is 4 hours 59. So yeah, if it was the Olympic qualification equivalent and I was in the best shape of my life, and with all of the elements that I've learned from this swim, because that was my first time ever doing a 17 kilometer swim in a straight line from one end of a lake to another. It was completely different experience to the pro circuit where you're with 80 other competitors and you've got pacing, you've got the circuit, the laps to go around, the feeding element, the physicality, and Florian Welbeck to set the pace effectively. so yeah, it was different and I thoroughly enjoyed it, but in hindsight, there was a slightly few errors that I made, such as feeding. I didn't feed enough. The trouble was, is when I did feed at like around 5K, it took me about 30 seconds swimming into the boat, grabbing the bottle. You're not allowed to touch the boat at all as well. One touch of the boat and it's a disqualification. That's how strict the BLDSA rules are. So, and that took 30 seconds. And to make that back, that takes 3 kilometers, second per 100 to make that back. So then I was quickly, I don't want to do that again. So the next time I fed, well, at least mitigate how many times I was feeding. So I next fed at 11 kilometers. And then I was feeling great. I was getting to the time as I was swimming. And then at 12, 13K, it hit me. I think I had hyperglycemia, where you have no sugar in your blood, just because I hadn't fed enough. And the last 4 or 5K was agony. One of the toughest open water challenges I've ever done. I think not because I wasn't physically fit enough, but I would say the feeding element, and that's something that I would be able to learn from. So to give you a time that I think I would be able to swim would be 3 hours 20, which would be... around that 1:11, 1:12 pace.
Do you think you'll do it again?
If someone comes along and beats that time, then maybe I'll go for it. But there are other swims that I want to swim, such as Loch Lomond, Lake Barletta in Wales, which is the biggest lake in Wales, and even the English Channel. I mean, there's even more swims than that, but they're the first three that I want to tick off. Not tick off in terms of the fastest time, but I just want to swim them. I love open water swimming. I'm fortunate to be able to race it internationally and class myself as a professional. But also enjoying these iconic swims like the rest of us do, it would be great as well. And fitting that in after 2024 maybe is something that I want to do as well.
So would you say this is potentially, let's say, your last Olympics, and then this would be your then target afterwards to do all these like sort of super challenges, or is it still trying to go to LA next time as well?
No, so it wouldn't be, Paris won't be my last Olympics. LA is in my sights as well. Okay. But I can take a more relaxed approach after Paris for a few months and perhaps tick some of these swims off in my summer holidays. so yeah.
You've said about all of these iconic swims in this country, and there's Lake Windermere, which me and Dan have swam. I've done it twice. Dan's done it once as well.
Just the you
once,
swam yeah. the yeah. length of Lake
no,
Windermere?
No, I haven't done the length. I've done the Great North Swim.
Great North Swim. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Great North Swim. Yeah. So I've done that. I love the Great North Swim. Great fun.
Fantastic, yeah.
And you're naming all of these other amazing lakes, these bodies of water, but like we spoke to Toby Robinson about this, there's no professional open water race in this country. And it really bugs me.
It's a big issue. I think part of the problem is the format of it. So the way these events are organized and the exposure that open water has at the moment, there's not a lot of money in it for World Aquatics and LEN to invest massively into these events. So if you want to host a World Cup or a European LEN Cup, you have to put the money up as a federation. And that includes the prize money. And the prize money is quite large. For a World Cup, the total, including top 10 men and top 10 women, which is the end payout point, it's $30,000 for a federation. Mm-hmm. And that's not including any costs of all of the referees, all of the volunteers, the marquee. You know, there's so many costs with events. And it's the same for LEN. The prize money is slightly smaller, but the federation still has to put it up. And so it's just, for British swimming, it's not feasible at the moment, just because of the participation on a professional level in the UK. Maybe if more people start doing it, they might be interested. Who knows? Hopefully for the future.
Would you ever consider yourself to be sort of an ambassador to try and push that across the line at some point in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think open water is my passion, and pushing open water to heighten as a sport would be something that I'd be interested in doing after my career. I don't know what job that would be in or how I would do that, but it would definitely be something I'd be interested in.
I mean, I'd love to get involved with trying to push out over the edge, even if it's like linking up a... or starting up, because Wales, they have a good open water series over there, don't they? So it's even like starting to bring that a bit more professional, or like you put you guys, like you and Toby, race the Great North Swim and actually put like a proper elite race in that, like, because a Great North Run, for example, would have Mo Farah and professional runners running that one. So it, like, even if there's some way of integrating and making some sort of home series that isn't the same payday as the fees that you're talking about, but even if it's like there's four Olympic quality swimmers, like you, Toby, Amber, or five, Amber, Leah, and Alice Deering, like all capable of putting on quite a show. And I don't know, I just wish there was a bit more for you guys to race over here, like, because the summer was rubbish this year, but there's some beautiful lakes that you've mentioned that would be so good to see, because participation is high. Like, it is high for open water.
On an amateur level, it's huge in the UK, probably one of the biggest countries in the world. And I you're absolutely right that we've got some beautiful lakes and bodies of water for races. I think I speak for the majority of the open water professional circuit that the 2018 Glasgow European Championships was one of the best open water races that most of us have ever done in terms of organization, the actual beauty of the lake, the venue, everything. It was fantastic. And Colin Hill, you may know him.
Yeah,
he organized all of that. And he also organized the 2012 London Olympics in Hyde Park. So he's considered one of the greatest event organizers for open water in the world. And so if he was maybe to be employed by someone who was interested in putting on an event, a professional event, then he would be your man.
I just keep having these visions of like drone shots coming over the swimmers and then taking, having a little look up, and you have all these mountains, like the Scottish mountains or whatever it is. Just, it would look pretty cool, I think, really quite scenic on camera.
There you go. I think that's the way you market it. You actually sell it to a tourism body rather than a federation. You say tourism body, what if we got all of these shots and got people looking at the Highlands of Scotland or the Lake District, and you got involved of funding it that way.
Yeah,
there's some conversations to be had off the mic here.
I think it has the potential to become maybe not as big as cycling, because that's probably got a 100-year advantage at the moment. Mm. But it's got a lot of the same elements in terms of drafting, feeding, physicality. Yep. In cycling, I only really got into it this year with the Tour de France and the Unchained documentary. But that is a seriously physical sport, not just like from accidents, but quite a lot of the time intent, pushing and shoving for places, especially on that sprint finish. So yeah, it's pretty aligned with cycling, and so follow that layout in terms of the jerseys and doing a swim every day for a set period of time would be very spectator friendly as well.
I like the idea for that. Now, Hector, before we round up this podcast, we've got some public questions for you. We put out a tweet, or we put out an Instagram post, sorry, and people have got some ones that come your way. So we'll rattle through these kind of quick fire fashion. So first one is, do you get nervous before every race?
Yes, definitely. Though I would like to say I got more nervous before my driving test than I did in the Olympics.
Really?
Did you pass?
I remember saying
test?
That to my driving instructor, and he laughed.
What drinks did you have during your distance swim race, and what would you usually have?
So I use the Morton energy gels and carbohydrate sachets. So they're fantastic. And I think Morton has recently come onto the scene over the last 3 years, and they've got some of the best endurance athletes in the world. And in terms of how quite a lot of people tell me that they struggle with how that sits in the gut, some energy gels. But for me, Morton, I've never experienced that with Morton. And it's jam packed with carbohydrates, so perfect for my races.
Some nice advice there for long distance swimmers. When did you know you wanted to be a professional swimmer? How old were you?
Well, it's funny because there's actually like a interview in Ellesmere College Titans First Days where I'm 7 years old, and they ask me what I want to be when I'm older, and I say I want to be greater than Michael Phelps. I want to be the president, well, the prime minister of the UK, and I want to be a billionaire. And for my whole of my swimming career, a lot of people in the swimming world have seen this in the UK, and they always kind of joke about it. What happened to you becoming the prime minister, Hector, or even a billionaire? I mean, I've got time to achieve that, hopefully, but minister element.
Yeah.
What differs from doing a 10k swim to a marathon swim, like your 25k that you did, or this swim, or potentially swimming the channel next?
So in race format, in a race, 10k is harder than 25k. You might find that funny, but in terms of the pacing and how relaxed it is, for the first 15k, it's 1:15s, 1:14s. And then that last 10K, we rank it up to 109s. Also, like the feeding element, over 25K, it's crucial to be feeding every lap. Whereas in a 10K, you kind of can miss one or two laps, and it's not going to be as detrimental to the end of the race.
I'm gonna throw in one more question there. Let's say everything goes really, really well. You qualify for the Paris Olympics next summer. What's your aim going to be?
I think every professional athlete should be going to the Olympics with the hope and aim to podium. So that's my dream for this year. That's what I'm going to be envisioning when I'm staring down at the bottom of the tee line at the pool, day in, day out. And how can I get there? I would say, well, 10th place at Fukuoka. I'm quite a few places away from there at the moment, but if you take it in terms of the time I finished behind, and then take that as a percentage, it's 1.52% difference than I am from Florian Welbrook. So it's going and sitting down with Andy Manley and finding how I improve by that 1.5% or even 2%.
I think he's the coach to have in your corner as well right now for distance swimming. Definitely.
Yeah, he's
definitely
doing very well. Yeah.
Hector, that's a very good place to end this podcast, but we do usually finish with some quick fire questions. So what is your favorite event in swimming?
10K marathon.
Who is your swimming idol?
Ferry Vertman.
Oh, I like it. What's your proudest moment in swimming so far?
2021 Olympic qualification in Setebal.
What's the hardest set you've ever done?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
If you want to,
I would probably say I've done 10 1000s before off 11:30. But I've also done a nasty fly set, which was, I posted, you probably saw it 2 years ago. It was 4 400s fly off 5 minutes, 4 200s fly off 2:40, 4 100s fly off 1:15, and then 4:50s all out off 45. So either one of those, you pick.
Jeez. Good luck whoever wants to try fly that. And to get to know you a little bit away from the swimming pool or the lake, open water, wherever you're swimming. If you just go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car. You can take friends, family, celebrities, anyone you want. Who would you take with you?
Oh, that's a hard question. I'd take my partner, Cassandra. I would say Robbie Williams. Some good tunes.
Okay,
nice.
And maybe Tyson Fury. I think he's quite funny. He's quite controversial, and I've been watching Furies at home with the Furies.
Mm.
So he's quite a character, and I think it would be funny, like me, Robbie Williams, Cassandra, and Tyson Fury in a little Fiat 500 going on a road trip.
I don't know if Tyson Fury fits in that. He's 6'9", isn't he? He might need a bit of squeezing in.
Yeah, it would look funny.
Well, Hector, thank you so much for coming on to this week's podcast. A massive congratulations to your record swim up in Windermere. And just a reminder for those who want to donate to a fabulous cause, making sure that our waters, especially the Lake Districts, aren't contaminated. The link is in the show notes of this podcast. And yeah, best of luck for your lead into Doha, because that's where you can qualify for Paris. And hopefully we see you very soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. We're looking forward to your channel swim as well. That's your next big challenge plan, I think, isn't it? But Paris is the number one focus, I would say. So yes, best of luck for that.
So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you'd like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, we will be eternally grateful. But until then, me and Dan will see you in 7 days' time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.